Hello and welcome to this special edition of Europe Now. I'm in Kiev on the second anniversary of the full-scale war in Ukraine. A war that has likely killed and wounded hundreds of thousands of people and left about 18% of Ukrainian territory under Russian control. And you can see some of the tributes to the fallen here. Now, it's also the 10th anniversary of what Ukrainians call the Revolution of Dignity, which happened right here on the Maidan. It saw tragedy, but it also cemented Ukraine's pro-European direction, which culminated in the European Union agreeing to start accession talks for Ukraine to join the bloc 2 months ago. Throughout this war, the EU has been a key partner for Ukraine, providing at least 85 billion euros in aid and enacting no fewer than 12 sanctions packages on the Russian Federation. But finding consensus inside the EU is becoming harder.
For months, European leaders have faced off with one EU colleague over Ukraine aid, Viktor Orbán, the Hungarian Prime Minister. He says the EU should focus on peace, not military aid. Orbán blocked the financial support to Ukraine at the December EU summit, but in February he backed down after a deal was reached in which Hungarian money won't end up in Ukraine. Kiev could receive the first tranche of the 50 billion euros in March.
My name is Konstantin Yevtushenko. I'm the managing partner in Unit City. And Unit City is the largest innovation park in Eastern Europe, based in Kyiv. This is the place where Ukrainians and all the other worlds can collaborate in tech and creative industries. You know, we've been traveling a lot around the world, and we've been assembling these pieces of how can Ukraine be supportive and add more value to the world. And we understand that everybody knows how to work with Ukrainians within their companies internationally, but nobody knows how to work with Ukrainians in Ukraine.
I'm with the Deputy Prime Minister of Ukraine, Olga Stefanishyna, who is in charge of European integration and Euro-Atlantic integration. Deputy Prime Minister, welcome to the program.
Thank you for coming here to Kyiv. It's a great pleasure for us to see you.
You wanted to meet us here in this innovation park, not in your office in the government. Why this place?
We know ourselves very well. We know what country and what spirit we represent, but this is not a very common perception in other countries. Still, there is a lot of perceptions that we have Soviet flair in everything we do. And I just wanted to show the country from the perspective we really are.
Obviously, I want to talk to you about European integration, but first, let's have a quick overview of the various EU funding programs that are active in Ukraine. Sophie Samai has this explainer.
Since Russia launched its military invasion in 2022, the European Union's support for Ukraine has remained steadfast and financially consequential. As early as March 2022, the EU drummed up funds for its cohesion program named CARE. It helps EU member states use the ESF Plus and the ERDF to directly aid the millions of people fleeing Ukraine. On top of that, the EU's 10 billion euro REACT-EU fund, initially reserved for the economic recovery in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2022, has also been partially redirected towards Ukraine and its displaced population. In all, 17 billion euros have been set aside to help Ukrainians find accommodation, healthcare, and education in their host countries. Ukraine also benefits from the cross-border projects of Interreg programs with its EU neighbors, Poland and Romania, for example. These programs, financed by the ERDF, aim to improve healthcare, education, and the environment in frontier regions and level up services in countries who want to join the EU. EU aid to Ukraine isn't limited to cohesion funds. 31 billion euros have been provided for humanitarian aid, 10 billion euros in subsidies, loans, and guarantees from member states, and 27 billion euros in military training and weapons transfers. That's a total of 85 billion euros in aid from the EU in the period of 2022 to 2023.
So, Deputy Prime Minister, how supported do you feel by
the EU.
The commitment is still there and the unity is still there. And now we can count on a financial support and on the accession process. We have a strong administrative capacity. We have an enormous political will and 91% of Ukrainians pushing the country towards European integration. But still, we're seeking for clarity from European Commission on the next steps. Over the last year, we have made a self-screening based on the EU acquis, which we were provided with from European Commission. So we have made this process already, and we know where we stand. We have a very well-positioned infrastructure, whereas I have a deputy ministers for EU affairs in every ministry and institution in Ukraine. So now we're only waiting for European Commission to start. So far, we see that Commission is really moving slow, although there is a will at the level of the leadership of the European Commission. The bureaucracy is still not moving.
The EU has said that they want you to strengthen two anti-corruption bodies in particular. And since we last talked, there was a high-profile arrest of a senior member of the Defense Ministry for allegedly embezzling funds that were destined for ammunition production. When you see cases like that, how damaging do you feel they are?
Hearing about these investigations, these cases, they're totally unpleasant. But on the other side, from the retro perspective of my experience, it's also the sign that says that things are working in this country. And this is also the signal to all those others, there's no impunity.
So what's your view of Viktor Orbán, the Hungarian Prime Minister?
Viktor Orbán has not been in Ukraine for more than 10 years, which means that he simply have not seen this country in the way it is. So he has seen the destroyed motorcycle facility, but not the innovation park. We're here today. And it's vital that he makes a visit to Ukraine. And at the same time, we saw the strength of European Union to say that there's no way of business as usual, where we could spend years and years in playing this veto-driven process. The time demands a consensus-driven process.
Thank you so much, Olga Stefanishna, for being on France 24.
Thank you.
Now, the EU has provided support and cohesion funds through neighbouring countries to help with things like transport networks, education and healthcare. Our reporter Luke Brown takes a look at some of those projects in Lviv in western Ukraine.
Routine surgery at the Lviv Children's Hospital. Until recently, though, this procedure wasn't routine at all. Thanks to EU funds, the surgical team has new, more precise equipment.
Is more safely for children, more precise for children, and we perform more modern surgery due to that we have this very good equipment.
The Lviv Children's Hospital received 1.5 million euros from the EU's Interreg program. With less invasive surgery, twice as many patients can receive treatment and recover quicker.
Нам це допоможе.
Our medical system is ready to join the European Union and work on an equal footing with European doctors. What we need is help on the technology side. We need equipment.
European cohesion projects mostly predated the war, but now EU funding is playing a major role in Ukraine's ongoing reconstruction. The Russian occupation of Irpin in the Kyiv suburbs left scores of homes damaged in the early days of the war. Andriy's flat was shelled. Having fled the east of Ukraine a decade ago, it's the second time he's been left homeless by Russian aggression. EU funds paid to repair the roof and the exterior walls.
When you see half the house in such a terrible state, and it has collapsed and has been burnt down, well, it led to a certain period of depression for me.
Andriy's building is part of a program that received 25 million euros from the EU. In all, it will renovate hundreds of apartment buildings and provide repaired homes for 38,000 families.
The help from the European Union, which has provided funding for the restoration of houses, for the restoration of Ukraine, that help will enable people who are currently in Europe to return to their homes, to their families, to their motherland.
The Russian advance scarred civilian infrastructure of all kinds. The EU promised 100 million euros to repair Ukrainian schools, aiming to help 20,000 students back to class. Russian troops occupied this village school, burning textbooks in the library. EU funds here paid to repair the hallway and classroom, a step back to normal life for the pupils.
We always tell the children, look, kids, can you see how much support we receive from foreign countries? We understand very well that this money could have been invested in the development of culture and society in those other countries. And instead, that money is given to us. We are so, so grateful.
The EU funds also contributed to transforming an underground coal store into a school bomb shelter. Now the 200 pupils can continue learning even when the air raid alarms sound.
Even if the lights go out here, they still have a place to charge their mobile phones because there's a generator here. So, of course, that feeling provides a real sense of comfort, stability, and total confidence that everything is fine.
Over 100 school shelters have been rehabilitated by the EU. In all, the EU has contributed 85 billion euros in aid to Ukraine, providing financial, humanitarian and military assistance.
If one waited and did not address the reconstruction, rehabilitation needs, then you would have a destroyed country. And how do you expect people to return? You need to rebuild schools, you need to rebuild hospitals. I mean, let's not forget, Putin's Russia has been systematically destroying civilian objects, civilian infrastructure. It has been committing these war crimes.
In December, Ukraine took another step closer to joining the European Union, but with no end in sight to the war on its territory, the route towards full EU membership is long and far from simple.
I'm in the Hanenko Museum in central Kyiv, which, as you can see, has suffered quite a lot of war damage. And I'm with Ukraine's most famous author, Andrei Kurkov, the celebrated author of The Penguin, Grey Bees, and many other works of fiction. And Mr. Kurkov, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you.
How symbolic is this room in this museum of what's happened to Ukrainian heritage?
Well, the culture is one of main victims of this war. Not only because we lost about 40 writers and poets who were killed by Russians, but also together with actors and architects and film directors, we are talking about hundreds of people who were active in Ukrainian culture. But also, of course, the historic heritage is destroyed, including many museums and many libraries. 300 libraries are destroyed. The losses, cultural losses of Ukraine are immense, but at the same time, theaters are working in the free territory. Cinemas are working. There are new venues to play classical music. And people actually are using culture as a remedy, as a psychological medication.
One of the European Union's goals is to support cultural heritage in Ukraine. Do you think the EU has had much of an impact?
There are different projects and grants for Ukrainian artists and for film production. There are grants from European Union to restore destroyed buildings like theater in Chernigiv and Odessa Arts Museum. But I hope there will be much more help from European Union because, I mean, we are talking about hundreds of destroyed historical buildings and this is the big part of Ukrainian heritage.
You have been traveling recently to the United States. You're going to France again soon. How do you see your role internationally?
Well, I'm only talking about Ukraine. I'm trying to push the message to the West that this is not local war. And it's not a simple war to grab Ukrainian territory. It's also a war against Ukrainian identity, and Ukrainian culture is part of Ukrainian identity.
In the last 2 years, have you noticed a difference in how Ukrainian culture and literature is perceived abroad?
Well, it's actually the first time Ukrainian literature and Ukrainian culture became really known abroad. And finally, yeah. People understood that actually that Ukrainian culture has its own history. Because, for example, until the war, nobody was translating into foreign languages Ukrainian classical literature. People thought in the West that from this area can only Russian great classical literature come. So Ukraine was ignored on all levels. Ukrainian composers were not played in concert halls in Geneva, in France. Now, actually, you can see that they are in the repertoire of many philharmonic halls. So the same is happening with classical literature, the same is happening with paintings, with films.
Given the whole international environment, how important is it, do you think, that Ukraine joins the European Union?
Well, it's the most important thing, because I think it is easier for Ukraine to join European Union than to join NATO. And Ukraine is a European country with European history. Ukraine was part of Polish-Lithuanian kingdom, was part of Austrian-Hungarian Empire. So, I mean, Ukrainians are Europeans. They are individualists. They want to be in charge of their country. They criticize their leaders, and they are very self-sufficient. And authoritarian regime is not possible in Ukraine because of this individualistic mentality. And the mentality of Ukrainians is the same as mentality of French people, Italians, Poles.
Thank you so much, Andrei Kurkov, for being our guest on Europe Now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's all for part one of the show. I'll be back in a few minutes with the second part of this special program dedicated to the second anniversary of the war in Ukraine. Do stay with us.